Lydia had been in his home several times, and she had spells for detecting things that were invisible. It wouldn't be too much of a stretch to assume she could also detect enchanted objects, and he had told her about how his mirrors worked. He had even given her a couple of them. Yes, he considered. Lydia could have found it. Or my contact has access to someone with a similar skill set. Maybe Lydia is my contact, or working with my contact. But what would her motive be? Jonan shook his head. I'm ignoring my best clue. He picked up the note, and taking a breath, he unfolded it. Meet me at the corner of Abigail and Morning Way in the Commons at 6 bells after the night frost rises. V. Jonan folded the note back up, grimacing. Vague note is vague. Maybe that's what the V stands for. Could have given me a description of who to look for, or... Jonan remembered the flower. The indigo flower. Indigo like a certain Rethri woman's eyes. Oh, bloody resh. V stands for Vorain. I just got played by a goddess. Picking up the dagger, Jonan shoved it back into its sheath. Tonight, 6 spells after the night frost. That's not enough time to plan. Not enough time for my sight to fully recover. Not even close. He lay back on his bed, thinking. She must have followed me here after our fight. I shouldn't have assumed I lost her. Once she found the house, she could have investigated at her leisure. I can't believe I was so careless. But she didn't kill me. Not when we first met, nor after she discovered my hiding place. She did smash the mirrors, though. Clearly that was meant to send a message. It could be someone else. The V and the flower could be a ruse. Unlikely, though. No one, aside from Lydia and Talion, even knows that I encountered Vorain. Unless Vorain told someone, which is also possible. But if this was one of her agents or contacts, it's effectively the same as it being her. It still could be Lydia, trying to scare me somehow. She has sufficient information, but still no motive. Since it's probably not her, maybe I should go to her for help. That could tip me off if she's responsible, too. But if the intruder is watching me, going straight to Lydia puts her in terrible danger. They might have already seen me working with Lydia. They might not have. If it really was Vorain that went down there, I can't let her know Lydia is working against Adon. That puts Lydia at too much of a risk. He sighed. Wish Talion wasn't at the palace. After handling one god, I'm pretty sure he could tackle another. I need to get that powerful someday. Okay. Enough self-recrimination. Action time. Jonan sat up, contemplating his options and resources. It was time to make a plan. Jonan sat across the street from Abigail and Morning Way, wrapped in a blanket, a half-open bottle of whiskey at his side. An illusion wrapped him tighter than the blanket, producing false stubble, wrinkles, and blemishes on his clothes. He hunched forward, staring at seemingly nothing, but his gaze was firmly fixed on the point where his contact was supposed to arrive. Occasionally, his eyes would dart from left to right, scanning for anyone that approached him. As he anticipated, most passers-by kept their distance from him. Many avoided even looking at him. The smell of whiskey on his breath probably helped. That was real. Not only had he needed a drink, the odor helped add to his disguise. He didn't beg for money or mumble. He didn't want to do anything that might garner him any additional scrutiny. He wasn't quite sure what constituted 6 bells after the night frost rose. The rising of the night frost was a somewhat subjective time. He had decided to arrive about an hour before the dawnfire set, and sat watching the area with temporarily enhanced vision. His vision had recovered only slightly during the intervening hours, and maintaining both the illusion and his sight enhancement was a dangerous prospect. He knew he could cause himself permanent damage by straining his eyes too much, but he saw no better alternative. The indigo-eyed woman arrived, without fanfare, about 40 minutes after he had. She looked to be alone, and she still wore the violet robes of a court sorceress, dotted at the collar with 3 of the same spear-marked pins that Lydia wore. Jonan glanced across her body for weapons, finding none that were obvious. Her voluminous robes could have concealed daggers beneath, perhaps strapped to her legs, or even sheathed inside her boots. From his vantage point, Vorain didn't look like much of a goddess. She shifted from foot to foot, glancing around the area as awkwardly as he had, and eventually began to pace. After a few minutes, he felt somewhat sorry for her. "That girl broke my stuff," he reminded himself. "Don't be too nice." Still, he had to admit, while he watched her, she looks very normal, even with the indigo eyes. That normalcy had a certain charm, given the madness he had been dealing with lately. After a few minutes of pacing, the woman turned and looked as if she was debating leaving. He stood, discarding the blanket. He'd pick it up later, and walked across the street behind her, abandoning his illusion. She turned around at the sound of his footsteps, taking a step back as she noticed him. Then her eyes flicked to the side of him, catching the discarded blanket, and she cracked a grin.
"Clever, hiding in plain sight. I expected you to be invisible, and I was checking for that."
She folded her arms in front of her, her prior signs of nervousness fleeing from her visage. "I do endeavor to keep things interesting, Ms. Vorain," Jonan replied, matching with a smirk of his own. "Now, how can I be of service?"
"Well, if that's the question you want to ask, you can leave the city," she replied. "Leave and never come back."
Jonan put his hand to his chest.
"I'm wounded. After all you've seen me do, you can't think of a better way to put me to use?"
Vorain frowned.
"That's good. Keep her off guard. Keep her guessing. You're offering to work for me?"
"I'm willing to entertain the possibility, given your credentials. I admit, I've never worked for a goddess before. It does have a certain appeal."
She beckoned to him.
"Walk with me."
Jonan tensed. He had been much more comfortable staying in the same area, which he had already examined thoroughly. A walk could, and probably would, lead him into a trap.
"Of course," he replied, bowing gently at the waist.
As he took a step toward her to follow, Vorain turned backward and slipped her left arm around his right, taking it as if she was escorting him to a ball. Jonan blinked furiously.
"We can't be talking about gods and goddesses out here," she said. "Rumors quickly take on legs."
Jonan raised an eyebrow at her phrasing. "Must be a Rethri colloquialism."
"All right, then. Where are we going?"
"You'll see,"
she assured him.
"It isn't far."
"Lovely."
He suddenly wished he had brought his dagger. It wasn't much, but it was more reliable than the two potions he had shoved into his pockets. He had left it behind to avoid looking like a threat, but given who he was walking with, he was beginning to regret that. Vorain was truer to her word than he had expected. She led him to a run-down single-story house about a block away. She led him to the door and turned the handle, shoving it open. The entry room was about the size of Jonan's bedroom and near empty. A small bed lay near the back wall, and a rickety-looking wooden table sat across from it. The only other room in evidence was a tiny washroom near the back left side of the room. Vorain guided him inside, turning to close the door behind them. The wood of the doorframe was warped, resisting her push, but she eventually managed to slide the door into alignment and shut it.
"What's this?" Jonan inquired, glancing around.
"This," Vorain explained, "is my home."
Jonan turned and quirked a brow at her silently, awaiting an explanation.
"When I first came to this city, this place was a blessing. I was just a girl, and a desperate one at that. My brother and I shared that bed."
She pointed, indicating the bed in the corner.
"For 3 years, I couldn't have afforded even this, but the owner was desperate to get rid of it. It wasn't a great neighborhood, you see."
Jonan nodded.
"Must have been pretty desperate to sell to a young Rethri girl. I've only seen a handful of Rethri in this city, and they seem to keep to themselves."
"Why were you and your brother on your own?" She visibly tensed, her expression souring.
"Maybe I asked the wrong question."
"Hope,"
she explained.
"My family had given up on him."
Vorain led Jonan over to the table, and she took a seat on top of it. She patted the side, inviting him to sit next to her.
The table looked like it could barely hold even her weight, but he didn't want to offend her, so he gingerly took a seat beside her, trying not to put too much pressure on it. She finally slid her arm out from his, glancing away from him toward the wall.
"About 1 in every 1,000 Rethri is born without a functional dominion bond. As I'm sure you know, most Rethri are born with a tie to a specific dominion. You can tell which one by looking in our eyes,"
she said, pointing at her indigo orbs.
"When we come of age, we undergo a ritual that strengthens the bond. This helps stabilize our health and slows our aging process."
Jonan nodded. "I grew up near Liadra, so I'm no stranger to the Rethri bonding process. I've even attended a few bonding ceremonies." Varane furrowed her brow.
"That's rare. You're one of the Order of Valian, then?"
"That's a trap of a question if I've ever seen one." "No, but I work with them," he replied, giving her a similar answer to the one he had given Lydia. It wasn't precisely untrue. She nodded at that, seeming satisfied.
"Is that why you were concerned about the children? Is this some sort of Order of Valian investigation?"
"And an even more dangerous question." "Not precisely. Before I get into that, though, you mentioned that some children are born without a functional dominion bond. I've never heard of that before, and I've been around Rethri my entire life."
"It is a sad subject,"
Varane explained.
"Because the Uvar, that's our word for unbonded, are usually returned to Valian immediately after they are born."
"Turned to Valian?" Jonan blinked. "Lissari is the giver of life to the Rethri. Valian represents preservation, but also death." "You mean they're killed?" Varane nodded.
"It is considered a kindness. The Uvar never develop properly. In the old days, before they were sent back to Valian, the Uvar usually died within a few years of their birth. Sometimes extreme measures were taken to protect the children, but they would age rapidly and disproportionately, and no amount of sorcery seemed sufficient to repair the damage."
Things were starting to click together in Jonan's mind. "Your brother was born as an Uvar." The goddess nodded, raising a hand and making a gesture across her eyes.
"He was. My mother died birthing him, and my father was crushed. I pleaded with my father to eschew the tradition and spare my brother. Elias, that's my brother, was mother's last legacy. Father didn't see it that way."
"So you took your brother and ran?" Jonan guessed.
"Yes,"
Varane said, resting her hands on her knees.
"Yes, that's what I did."
She was brave, Jonan considered. Saving her brother, abandoning her grieving father. I wonder how different things would be if I had been that brave when...
"The reason I'm telling you all this," the indigo-eyed girl explained, "is because I believe you wanted to help those children. I've watched you closely, and I think you're one of few humans I've met that would take a risk for one of my kind."
"And you want my help?" Jonan asked. She shook her head.
"No."
She put a hand on his shoulder.
"No, I don't need that anymore, but you're sweet to ask. I wanted you to understand that the children are going to be fine now."
Jonan frowned. "How?"
"When I ran from home, I chased a myth, a land where they claimed anyone could become a god. These gods, I believed, had power, and power to do anything, maybe even save my brother. I was just a child, of course. I had barely gone through my own coming-of-age ritual when I ran away. I didn't understand the ways of the gods, or even the ways of people."
"Looks like it worked out for you pretty well, goddess," he said, cracking a grin. She chuckled.
"If only that were true. I'm still just Riala Dianis, a girl trying to take care of her brother. Edon, however, is a type of god I needed, the type of god who cared."
"Riala Dianis? Like House Dianis? Or the Dianis Arcane College in Velthrin? That explains some things." "So, you're saying the godhood is a lie, but that the idea behind it is good?"
"No,"
Varane shook her head.
"I'm saying that I'm not a god, but Adon is, and that he cares about people, more than any of the old gods seem to. He is working to save my brother and others like him.
Ah, that's what all this is about. Your brother is one of the kids in the hospital, and you'll do anything to save him.
Jonan considered that for a moment, thinking back. Is Adon the older man I saw in that hospital? The one who goes by Raymond Laurel?
Rayala shook her head.
No, but Raymond is a good man. He's the one who took me and my brother in. We had nothing when we first came to this city. Elias was deteriorating, and I had no way to stop it. I tried selling my sorcery skills. It didn't go well. But Raymond heard about me and tracked me down. He's a minor sorcerer himself, just stability sorcery. That minor talent was precisely what Elias needed. Raymond bought us time.
So Raymond is one of these court sorcerers I keep hearing about? I didn't see any pins on him, Jonan noted.
No, he's not a court sorcerer, just a man with a minor talent. My skills already exceeded his when we met, but I couldn't do anything about my brother, and he could. Raymond did have a few connections with stronger sorcerers. He introduced me to Sethridge. When Sethridge saw what I could do, he hired me immediately. Things got better from there. I met Adon and convinced him to help Raymond with researching Elias's condition,
she explained, sounding exhausted. If Adon really is a god, why hasn't he fixed the problem already?
It doesn't work like that,
Varane explained.
The gods aren't omnipotent, and Adon is weaker than most. He ascended from mortality to godhood, much like the Taos gods supposedly did thousands of years ago. Gods learn and grow, just like people do.
Sure, followers of Valian claim that he used to fight the Taos pantheon, all seven of them, all at once. But what makes this Adon a god, then? I mean, you're Rethri. Don't most of you think gods are just powerful sorcerers?
Jonan quirked a brow.
There is a difference between gods and sorcerers,
Vorain explained.
And I've seen it. I've seen what Adon can do, and it's far beyond anything a sorcerer like us could accomplish. If I earn it, he promises he'll teach me someday, when I'm ready to control that level of power. But I have no illusions about that. No one shares that kind of power without a price. He might not ever tell me his secret, but he doesn't have to. He's doing good things with it. He's helping cure the sick. What more could I ask of a god?
Jonan pondered that for a moment. Okay, so she's convinced he's legitimate. And I have to admit, that thing where he disabled all the sorcery in the arena was pretty impressive. But there are other explanations for raw power. That heartlance that Miros was carrying, for example. Perhaps he's learned how to siphon power off from artifacts to cast spells. That could accomplish something on a similar scale.
Would you mind satisfying my curiosity and explaining what types of abilities Adon possesses that convince you he's a deity?
Jonan asked.
I've seen him demonstrate things to me that are outside of the capabilities of ordinary sorcerers. I'm not going to tell you all about that yet. I still haven't decided you can be trusted,
Vorain explained.
I've taken a terrible risk just by having this conversation with you. I hope you understand that.
Jonan nodded.
Sure. You could have just killed me while I was sleeping or something. I appreciate that you didn't.
If you're not a god, though, why does he claim that you are?
Vorain scowled.
I don't like it, but he promised the people of this city that they can become gods with sufficient work. He has to give clear examples every several years, otherwise people would lose faith in him.
So, he finds people who are supremely loyal, like yourself, to pose as his newly ascended gods?
That doesn't seem quite as benevolent as you make him out to be, Jonan insisted.
He doesn't like it either. But he hasn't perfected the process of making other people into gods just yet. And I think the Queen is a real god too,
she said, the last part in a whisper. Jonan perked up a bit at that.
Queen Regent Tylan? You think she's one too, but you're not sure?
That changes things, if it's true. I still don't think any of them are gods, but if he's managed to replicate whatever large-scale sorcery he's using in order to fake his divinity using another person, that means the threat is broader than I anticipated. Maybe he has multiple artifacts, or whatever he's using for a power source. What else could be used to power spells on the scale of what happened in the arena?
I've said too much already. I suppose I needed someone to confide in, since I've been playing this role for so long. But you should leave now. Get out of this city. Adon will take care of the children.
"Is Adon Donovan Taylor?" Jonan asked. She turned to face him, her eyes digging into his.
"Where did you get that name?"
Jonan slid back on the table, bumping into the wall. "He was a scholar in Velthrin that talked about people having the potential to become gods. His theories were very similar to what Adon claims to be possible."
"Why does it matter who he was?"
She leaned closer to him, and his head began to feel heavy.
"Resh, she's not just trying to intimidate me, she's using it."
"Donovan Taylor visited Keldris about 20 years ago, offering godhood to King Haldariel. After he left, a group of Rethri disappeared. Adon visited Salir about 7 months ago, and similarly, Rethri disappeared afterward."
Jonan rambled, unable to stop himself. He started to turn his head away, realizing what was happening, but she reached up and gripped his chin, turning his eyes back to meet hers.
"Stop trying to turn your head. Tell me more about the Rethri that went missing," she commanded.
"Stop! She's controlling—"
"Over half a dozen Rethri were reported missing after what happened in Keldris. No clear connection between them. Some young, some old. Some male, some female. They were never found. Adon founded his religion about 2 years after that. After Adon visited Salir, more than 20 citizens disappeared."
"That can't be a connection,"
Varane muttered.
"Why are you here?"
"Mostly to investigate the missing Rethri," he replied, gritting his teeth.
"And I really wish you'd stop doing that."
The so-called goddess scowled.
"I underestimated you again, but I need these answers. I don't like doing this to you, but it's the only way I can make sure you're telling the truth. I'm sorry.
Who do you work for?"
"Valian,"
he replied simply. Varane blinked, giving him an instant of control.
"Blindness,"
he thought, twitching a finger toward his face to target himself. Directly touching something was generally a more effective way of ensuring his spells functioned properly, but casting a spell on himself didn't strictly require anything other than concentration. His vision went black, and Varane's control faded immediately. He took no move to make this change evident to her, however. He simply kept his eyes open, sightless, and awaited her remaining questions.
"You work directly for Valian?"
she asked, seeming taken aback.
"No," he replied. "I normally work for the Order of Valian as a scribe. I was employed temporarily for this assignment because I'm not actually a member, and the officer who hired me believed that someone from high up in the Order might be working with Adon."
"What is the name of the officer gave you the order to come here and investigate the Rethri?"
she asked.
"Edmund Burke,"
he replied, making up a name.
"Were you sent here alone or with others?"
she inquired.
"Alone," he replied.
That was truthful, at least.
"I hope she doesn't move too much. If she does, my blindness will quickly become obvious. I'll need to turn my sight back on if I sense her shift too much."
"Do you have any contacts within the city?"
she asked.
"Yes,"
he replied simply.
"Who are they?"
"I don't have his name. I just sent him letters through the mirror. We aren't supposed to know who the other is."
Jonan's hand slipped down to his waist, inching its way toward his left pocket and the vial inside. He couldn't tell how obvious it was, since he couldn't even see himself, but he was getting progressively more nervous that he was quickly exhausting his usefulness to the indigo-eyed sorceress. Varane went silent. Jonan hesitated, taking a breath. Is she just trying to think of more questions? Did she move her head?
Rush it.
Vision return.
Varane was looking away from him, but she didn't seem to notice that his eyes hadn't followed hers. With luck, she had already cancelled her spell.
You didn't have to do that.
I would have answered you honestly, he said, trying to sound even more annoyed than he actually felt.
She shifted her gaze back over to him, but he didn't feel the twinge of her sorcery this time.
I have no way of knowing that for certain, and I needed to know the truth. I'm going to force you to answer one more question, and then you're free to go.
He gripped the vial in his pocket, but his movement was too slow. Her eyes had seized him again.
Resh! Should have acted while I had a window. I'm always too soft.
What did you think he was doing with the Rethri he was taking?
Varane asked.
Sacrificing them to extend his lifespan, Jonan replied.
Varane gasped audibly, standing and beginning to take a step back. Her control over Jonan faded as her head moved away. Jonan caught her wrist with his right hand, his left hand still sitting in his pocket, ready to strike.
Now you answer a question for me.
How long ago did Adon start gathering up those unbonded children?
Jonan demanded.
Varane shook her wrist, breaking Jonan's grip.
7 months ago, she said quietly. It was my idea. More people to research, to help my brother, and others like him.
And I take it you went with him to Salir and helped him find these children? Maybe even helped convince the parents to send the children along with you? Jonan guessed.
He's trying to help them, she insisted. You're wrong about him. He couldn't be using Rethri for that.
Jonan shrugged. I didn't know about the Unbonded when I came here. I doubt the people in the Order of Valian who sent me did either. They just told me the most likely hypothesis they could come up with. Adon looks too young to be a human of his age, and Rethri have ways of slowing down their aging process. It seemed like a logical conclusion.
Rethri coming-of-age rituals don't work on humans, Varane insisted in a whisper. It's been tried. Variations have been attempted for centuries.
Sure. And I assume the coming-of-age rituals don't work properly on unbonded Rethri either, making them more like humans. Jonan pushed himself into a more stable position on the table, musing.
I admit he could have discovered a ritual that works on humans while trying to cure the unbonded, Varane said hesitantly, stepping slowly away from Jonan. That's not wrong. He needs time for his research. Using himself as a test subject for a life-saving ritual is no crime.
No, Jonan remarked. But what about the Rethri that disappeared from Keldris nearly 20 years ago? They could not have been involved in this research, as you said yourself. You only suggested it 5 years ago.
Varane folded her arms, looking down at the floor. You're just trying to trick me. You're an illusionist. I should have suspected this.
You're the one with the thought sorcery. Neat trick, by the way. You can just ask me again with the spell. I'll tell you the same things. I won't resist. It was a gamble. If she asked him certain questions again, it wouldn't end well.
You're wrong about him, she insisted. Maybe he recruited some Rethri to help him in the early days, before he ascended. I wouldn't be surprised. As for his apparent age, that could easily be an illusion, like one of yours. Or, of course, he has divine powers now. None of the gods are supposed to age.
That last argument was hard to debate. If she was operating under the idea that Adon was an actual deity, and that deities had a way to stop themselves from aging, he had no way of disputing that premise. He had to undermine one section or the other, or he couldn't make any progress. You said yourself that different gods have different levels of power. Even if Adon is a god, there's no guarantee that stopping his aging process is one of his abilities.
I should have considered this before, Varane mumbled. I just assumed Rethri adults don't visibly age, so it didn't seem strange to me.
Help me find out the truth, Jonan offered. If he's just trying to help your brother, that's great. I would be pleased to report that back to the Order of Valian, in fact, if you would let me. Should I push further? Yes, now is the time. Even if I leave, he risked. Other members of the Order of Valian will come to investigate. If you can help me prove his innocence, I can prevent that. Varane turned away from him, presenting a perfect target. He itched to strike, but his hand slipped out of his pocket instead. Please, he pleaded. Between the two of us, we can verify the truth behind his claims. And, Jonan risked, if he is hurting Rethri for his own gains, we can stop him. Varane spun on her heels, turning to face him again, her jaw tense with anger.
I may have made a mistake in bringing you here.
Jonan stood up, his expression calm.
No, Riella. You chose to learn. That is never the wrong choice. If this gets my brother killed, you'll be wrong about that, Varane said. And you'll be dead.
Chapter 10. The Value of a Promise.
Never, Talion told himself, ever cauterize a wound with flame sorcery again.
Each of his wounds ached, but the salve that the medics had put on his injuries, including the gashes from the Asharan on his leg that had perplexed the healers, had eased the pain from most of them. It had done nothing for his self-inflicted burn. His concern that the wounds inflicted by the Heartlance would refuse to heal seemed unfounded.
The medics had claimed that the salve was blessed by Miros, and that was what stopped the bleeding.
Blessed salves. Sure, that sounds convincing.
Still, he was in a pretty good mood in spite of the pain. He limped alongside Landon and Lydia toward the High Palace, a place he had heard of but never visited. A half-dozen guards trailed behind them. Verudin had gone on ahead, claiming he had pressing business of his own to attend to.
"We're heading to Adon's home," Lydia explained as they walked. "It's a rare honor to be invited there. He used to be more active in the kingdom, but he gradually grew more reclusive as more gods ascended."
"Isn't the palace where the rulers of the city should live?" Talion asked, leaning heavily on a walking staff as he tried to keep pace with the others.
"Oh, sure. The Queen Regent is there, too," Lydia added. "I see her out in public more, though, so it's not quite as big of a deal."
"Must be nice to have the Queen's ear,"
Landon remarked. Talion quirked a brow at the brown-haired swordsman. "Aren't you one of the Queen's Guard?" Landon shrugged.
"Sure. Ostensibly, we'd be her bodyguards. Thing is, she's a goddess. She doesn't need guards. If she ever did, she's got Miros. A few of us are always assigned to Byron. The rest of us are mostly just for show."
"I'm sorry to hear that," Talion replied.
"Oh, it's not so bad. I mean, it certainly makes it easy to be successful at my job since I don't actually have to do it."
He chuckled.
"Sometimes it'd be nice to feel necessary, though. Or to have a way to prove myself."
"Is that why you fight in the arena so frequently?" Lydia asked.
"Yeah, more or less."
Landon cracked his knuckles as he continued to walk.
"I can understand that. I used to do the same thing."
"I was a Kovasi fighter for years," Talion explained. Landon glanced over at him.
"Kovasi? Isn't that a Rev 3 thing?"
"Yes, primarily. I grew up outside of Salir. Kovasi was the local sport. It's a little different than the type of fight we just had, but many of the same tactics applied."
"Ah, well, I feel a little better knowing I wasn't your first bout," Landon said with a grin. "How's Kovasi different?"
"Well, it's team-based," Talion explained, "and different Kovasi bouts use different territories. There is no clear arena. Essentially, 2 to 4 teams of 6 are sent to different places in the forest, given rough maps and non-lethal weapons, and told to hide a sigil from the opposing teams. To win, one team must gather the sigils of all the other teams while retaining their own. Matches would sometimes last several days."
"Wow. Several days out in the Forest of Blades. Isn't that dangerous?"
Landon asked. "Of course," Talion replied. "That is part of the charm."
"How do spectators watch such a large area?" Lydia asked.
"They don't," Talion explained. "Judges accompany each of the teams to observe and record. Once the match is completed, the teams reenact key moments in a performance for audiences."
"Like, you play-act things you already did?"
Landon asked.
Talion nodded. "Yes, it is not as difficult as it sounds. Rethri culture places a strong emphasis on honest communication and humility. Thus you rarely see anyone wishing to distort the events that occurred."
"Humility, eh? Guess you didn't pick up all the aspects of Rethri culture,"
Lydia said, nudging him lightly. He winced. Even the light touch briefly reignited the pain in his right shoulder.
"Indeed,"
Talion muttered, attempting to ignore the pain.
"I've always been better at winning."
"Hey, that's it up there,"
Landon pointed. Talion's eyes followed his gesture, widening as he traced it to a broad spire piercing high above the city. Talion squinted, noticing tiny windows in the structure for the first time. From a longer distance, he had previously assumed it to be a mountain.
"People live in there? It looks to be wrought for giants."
"When humans took over Orlan, they wanted to prove that they could make something more impressive than what they had been forced to build as slaves. Thus, the High Palace was built to replace the Low Palace, which had been the seat of the Zixian prince that ruled here,"
Lydia explained.
"Huh," Landon said. "I heard Adorn made it."
Lydia shook her head vehemently.
"No, the High Palace long predates Adorn's coming to the city. It was made through hard work, not sorcery. That is part of what makes it so impressive.
The trio walked in silence for the next few minutes as they approached the palace grounds. Talion marveled at the pristine garden they passed through on the way, the cultivated flowers accompanied by statues of each of the four local gods and champions of the days of old. As they finished the journey through the garden, the cobblestone path met with a marble walkway lined with silver-etched stone columns. As Talion glanced at each of the columns, he could see that the silver was some sort of tiny script, but it was unreadable from the center of the path where he walked.
Such wealth, Talion considered. How many men and women could be fed for what these marvels cost?
Four soldiers, clad in polished mail, saluted firmly as the trio approached. They stepped aside as the gates swung open, apparently controlled by some sort of internal mechanism. Lydia took the lead, apparently familiar with the location, while Landon and Talion trailed behind.
"You come here often?"
Landon asked toward Lydia.
"I used to work here," Lydia replied. "When I was first hired as a court sorceress, I stayed here for 2 months before being reassigned to the lower palace when one of my predecessors retired."
"Ah, that makes sense," Landon replied. "You're lucky. I'd love to have spent that much time here."
Lydia shrugged.
"It's not the same when you're working."
The Queen's Guard gave an understanding nod.
"I really need to isolate Lydia so we can discuss a plan,"
Talion thought. His injured leg was starting to itch, but he resisted the urge to reach down and scratch at it.
"This has gone far beyond what we previously discussed."
Another group of four guards approached their group moments after they stepped onto the purple carpet of the palace. Their leader wore a gold-etched breastplate, and Landon brought his right hand to his left shoulder in a salute as the man approached.
"Captain,"
Landon said, freezing in his step. The leader lazily returned Landon's salute, and then raised his other hand to wipe the sweat off his brow.
"Congratulations," he said, not sounding very congratulatory. "The bunch of you get to come with me. Adon is waiting this way."
Talion shot Lydia a questioning look, but she only shrugged at him, falling into step behind the new group of guards. Talion glanced behind him, noting that not only were the six guards from the arena following them, so were the four that had been positioned at the palace door.
10 behind us, Talion considered, 4 in front, and Landon within striking range.
They passed 3 more pairs of guards as they marched down softly carpeted halls, but these additional guards didn't join the procession. Talion wasn't sure if he should be comforted by that fact or not. As they passed a pair of intersections, Lydia's expression shifted into a slight grimace. Talion noted a long spiral staircase on their right side, just past the second intersection, which Lydia glanced at as well. Landon's expression seemed cheerful, as if nothing was amiss. That probably meant that either he was unaware of any pending treachery, or he was simply pleased to be a part of it. Neither thought was particularly reassuring.
"What are the odds that they know Lydia is working for the Paladins of Taos?"
Talion considered.
"I really shouldn't have accepted Landon's idea to bring her along. Granted, having an extra sword would be handy in my current condition, but I wouldn't want Jonin to have to rescue both of us later, assuming there would be anything left to rescue."
The guard captain with the gold-trimmed breastplate led the group to a third intersection, at which point he led the group to the left. Lydia slowed her pace, moving to a position directly at Talion's right. The others didn't seem to notice. The front guards paused at a rose-colored door, taking positions to either side of it.
"This way,"
the captain said, knocking twice on the door and stepping to the side of it. The door opened from within. A tall, blonde-haired man, standing within, the heart lance resting comfortably in his left hand. He was wearing a short-sleeved white shirt and gray trousers.
"Ah, please come in,"
he said, sounding jovial, almost boyish.
"Thank you, Lord Meros,"
Landon said, raising his right hand to his left shoulder and bowing at the waist. Lydia made the same gesture, surprising Talion for a moment.
"Should I do the same?" "Probably."
He chose not to. "Thanks," Talion replied, stepping inside the open door. he gaped at the display of food within. Half a dozen chefs bustled around a table set for 10, laying out steaming platters of a dozen exotic dishes. Even from the entrance, Talion could smell garlic, onion, and the distinct aromas of cooked beef and chicken. A single figure sat at the head of the table, the one who had stood on the dais above the arena, shouting downward. Adon. He somehow managed to look just as tall while seated as he had while looming over the arena, but it was a trick of presence, not of light. Adon seemed to emanate an almost palpable sense of confidence. The God of Ascension motioned for Talion to come forward, a crystal-inlaid ring on Adon's right hand sparkling brightly, and Talion approached without hesitation. "Where should I sit?" Talion asked, gesturing at the empty chairs surrounding the table.
"You're our guest. Sit wherever you like," Adon replied.
Talion walked past another pair of guards that stood on the inside of the doors, noting that these guards were wearing full plate, including helms, and took the seat to Adon's left. It was a position of challenge in Rethri culture. It meant that he could draw his sword directly into an attack. He wasn't sure if Adon caught the meaning behind it. The local culture likely had different standards. Adon only smiled benevolently, waving for the others to approach.
"Please, Landon, Sorceress Lydia, Miros, come, join us."
Talion glanced around, looking for the other combatants, but he could see no sign of them. "Will the other Queen's Guard be attending?"
"No,"
Adon replied.
"I only invited those who impressed me in the match, and the young sorceress seems to have invited herself,"
he pointed out. Lydia tilted her head to the side quizzically.
"Which also impresses me." "You are welcome to stay,"
he quickly added. Lydia nodded.
"Thank you, Ascended,"
she replied, bowing and saluting as she had with Miros. Talion hadn't heard her use that term for Adon before, but he assumed it was probably the man's formal courtly title. The man with the heartlance took a seat at Adon's right, directly across from Talion, just as Talion had hoped. As Talion nodded to the blonde man, he noted an oddity when he saw the inside of the spearbearer's exposed right elbow.
No wound. Not even a scar. Even a life sorcerer couldn't heal something so perfectly so fast. Maybe the Heartlance helps him heal faster. But he's a hint too tall, too, even if he's slouching to cover it. This isn't the same Miros I fought in the arena. Still, I'd better act like he is.
Landon sat down next to Talion and Lydia next to Miros. That was mildly awkward. He would have felt better with Lydia at his side, but he admitted it was a good tactic on Lydia's part. If the new Miros took any violent action, Lydia would be close enough to interfere.
"Please," Adon said, "help yourself to the food. There will be plenty of time to discuss business after we've eaten our fill."
Talion nodded gratefully, slipping a plate of beef toward him without hesitation. If they wanted to kill him, poisoning the ointment they put on his wounds would have been much more efficient than trying to poison the food for a table with several others. Seeing Talion take the lead, the others quickly began to pick at other plates. Chefs came around and left glasses of deep red wine for each guest. These, Talion considered, would be much more practical to poison, but I don't think they're going to try to off me so soon. It would look too suspicious. He took a sip, and it certainly didn't taste like poison. Not that he had much experience to compare it to. "I have to ask," Talion began, turning to Adon with a goblet in his hands. "Why the fixation on my presence in the city? I didn't come here to cause any trouble."
"Your capture was a simple misunderstanding," Adon offered. "If I had been apprised of your arrival in the city, I would have offered you diplomatic freedom immediately. Unfortunately, as you are no doubt aware now, we have strict laws against wearing Taos-related symbols in public. I sincerely doubt the guards who arrested you had any concept of who they were dealing with."
Talion nodded. "That makes sense," Talion replied. "I'm not particularly familiar with the history behind your city. I was just coming here to visit someone.
Why do you have such strict laws about Teos worship?
It usually doesn't come to an arrest, the Nat Miros offered. But we have to be careful not to allow Teos followers to propagate the old faith here.
Why is that? Landon asked, surprising Talion. Everyone turned to look at Landon, with Adon seeming to notice the man for the first time.
I mean, they're mostly harmless, aren't they? Believe in life and freedom and such?
Some sects have historically been much more violent than others, Adon explained. But violence is not the primary concern. I cannot tolerate the spread of ignorance in my city. The Teos Pantheon may have existed at one point, perhaps they still do, but they are no longer active in the world, and therefore no longer worthy of worship. Their religion misleads people into believing that these gods look after them, guide them, give them strength. That is no longer true.
The laws are for the protection of the people, Landon, Lydia explained, drawing a half-raised eyebrow from Talion. Old god worship prevents people from looking for real, practical solutions to their problems. They might stand over a sick man and pray to Lysari, for example, rather than seeking the aid of a doctor, or of the very real gods of our city.
I suppose that makes sense. Throwing them in irons just seems a bit harsh, Landon replied, jerking a thumb at Talion. I heard from Verudin that they put him in chains. In the Odellan room, no less. Where is Verudin, anyway? Thought he was coming.
Lydia glanced from side to side, frowning, apparently also processing Verudin's unexpected absence.
Again, it is unfortunate that actions were taken against our honored guest.
Adon waved to Talion.
Without my knowledge or consent. We have no laws that instruct anyone to bind Teos followers in chains. Typically, Teos-related symbols are simply confiscated, and the followers are educated and sent on their way.
Talion remembered that someone, maybe Lydia, had mentioned that Teos followers typically weren't treated harshly, and that his case was unusual. And, of course, Lydia had explained that he was going to be executed if he hadn't escaped.
I take no offense, Talion said, waving a hand dismissively in the air, turning back to Adon. I understand that you were not involved in my arrest. That said, I would like to see measures taken to ensure nothing similar happens again.
Adon raised a hand to his chin.
Is that what you are asking for as your boon, then? A change in the laws to protect Teos followers from abuse?
Talion shook his head. No, I'll request that as a part of my new position as an ambassador. The boon will come later.
Adon smiled warmly.
Very good. I would hope you wouldn't squander your prize on something as simple as that.
Squander? It would only be squandering the boon because you would not act on it in good faith. If anything, any abuses would simply be more secretive. I'm sure they will be either way, given how public this incident was.
Talion picked up a cutting knife and began to slice his beef into roughly equally sized pieces, considering.
What should I ask for? What would give me leverage?
I could ask for the Heartlance, he considered. It is within his power to give it to me, but I'd risk grave offense. The type of grave offense that would put me in the grave, most likely.
You were very open-ended about this boon you offered, Talion pointed out, still cutting his meat. What are the exact terms?
Ah, an excellent question. The boon must not violate any of our laws, create any kind of threat to the kingdom, or tax our resources in a way that would threaten the lives of the people of the city,
Adon explained, leaning forward across the table to pull a plate of bread toward him. The gesture seemed oddly disjointed from his lordly bearing.
All reasonable restrictions, Talion said, nodding.
You can have some time to consider it, Adon offered. In fact, I would be pleased for you to remain at the High Palace as my guest. I believe we could learn a great deal from each other.
Talion quirked a brow at that. I am honored by the offer, but I fail to see what knowledge I could offer you.
I'm just a swordsman. Landon and Nut Miros both scoffed at that.
You are hardly just a swordsman, Talion. I haven't had a fight like that in ages, the Miros said.
You haven't had a fight like that at all, Talion thought, but he forced a grin. You flatter me. I know I could not have won an extended exchange. I was forced to resort to dubious tactics, Talion offered, trying to sound more humble than he actually felt.
Dubious or not, they sure worked, Landon said, putting a hand on Talion's shoulder. You ever feel like doing a team bout? You come to me first.
Talion turned and nodded to Landon. I'd like that, actually. I regret not having a chance to see more of your licentier style.
Landon nodded. I'm sure we can set something up in the future.
Another bout with you in the arena would be certain to draw a great crowd, Adon offered. You were quite impressive today. We could arrange for you to demonstrate your skills again, perhaps to raise funds for a cause of your choice.
Talion pondered that. Another chance for them to try to off me in the ring, he considered. But that might be too blatant. Perhaps he just wants to use my reputation to make his city look better. Making me a local champion helps detract from any stories that I was initially mistreated, and it would even help make it look like he's being very reasonable about the Tales Pantheon. Or, Talion considered, it might even look like the Tales Pantheon has a presence here, and that it works for or with him. I'll have to think about it. Truth be told, I probably need a few days to recover before I make any serious decisions. Talion laughed, and the others laughed along with him.
Yeah, you took a bit of a beating there, the Miros said in a friendly tone. But that's to be expected, given that it was 5-on-1.
He evened out those odds pretty well, I'd say, Landon groaned. How'd you do that trick with pulling away all our swords?
Adon seemed to turn his gaze more intently toward Talion in response to Landon's question. Trade secret, Talion replied with a grin. Maybe I'll teach you someday.
Don't make promises if you're not going to keep them,
Landon replied with a grin. Not a promise, Talion amended, raising his hands in a warding gesture. Just a possibility. It depends on how long I'm in the city.
Well, I believe we can all agree that you would be welcome for a long stay,
Adon offered, taking a bite of a hunk of brown bread. Still chewing, he turned toward Lydia.
You're awfully quiet, sorceress.
I am simply overwhelmed in such august company, assented, Lydia replied, bowing her head slightly.
Resh, I don't remember you being so timid when I brought you on as a sorceress,
Adon said, waving his bread-carrying hand.
Tell us, what do you think Talion should ask me for his boon?
Lydia quirked a brow, turning to Talion, and then back to Adon. She raised two fingers, pushing up her glasses.
Well, if I was in his position, she said, sounding as if she was pondering aloud, I would ask you to make me a god.
A broad smile slid across Adon's face.
Ah,
he said, setting his bread down.
Now that's more like the sorceress I remember. A brilliant idea, and ambitious. Strictly speaking, it would not violate any of my conditions. Somehow, I doubt it would be to his style.
Very well. Make me a god, Talion said. That is the boon I require. I was planning to ask for help finding Eric Taran, but there's a good chance Adon is one of his enemies if Taran was working with Tales followers. This could get me more information, and more power if it's actually true. Adon turned to Talion, tilting his head to the side, chewing for another moment and then swallowing.
Interesting, he paused. Very interesting. I would not have expected that.
Adon glanced to Lydia, and then back to Talion.
Very well, then. That particular boon has a condition, however.
You'd really consider that, Master?
The Miros asked, shooting a quizzical glance at Adon. Landon seemed to have fallen silent for a change, glancing rapidly between Talion and Adon. Adon waved a hand dismissively at the Miros.
I offered him any boon within my capability. Godhood is not simple to obtain, as you already know.
He turned to Talion.
I can't simply snap my fingers and make you a god,
he explained.
But I can put you on the path and offer my help.
Accepted, Talion said. When do we start?
As you accurately pointed out, you probably should take some time to rest before doing anything taxing, and I assure you, the tests of godhood will be taxing.
Adon placed his elbows on the table, looking straight at Talion.
There will be considerable danger. Both failure and death are possible.
Tests of godhood. That seems like a great time for him to try to get rid of me. Talion glanced at Lydia, but her expression was neutral. He looked back to Adon. I will take some time to prepare for these challenges, then. Perhaps your champions, he indicated Landon and Miros, or even your sorceress could help me prepare.
You will be given all the resources you need, Adon assured him. But you must understand this. If I help to make you a god, you will be a god of this city, dedicated to this city and its protection. Those are my terms.
I have no objection to that, Talion replied, turning to Lydia too late to catch the trepidation in her features. A knock sounded on the door a moment later, causing all the people present to turn.
Open,
Adon said, and the door swung open, seemingly of its own accord. A thin, lanky-looking young man stood in the doorway, looking nervous.
I am so sorry to bother you. Queen Regent Tylan has requested Lydia,
he stammered.
Go ahead, sorceress, Adon offered. You can dine with us again another night.
Lydia turned to Adon, putting down her food, and gave him another bow and salute.
Thank you, Ascended. I will look forward to it.
She pushed herself away from the table, giving Talion one final look and pleading with her eyes for him to be careful. I'm always careful, he said with his return glance and a half-grin, especially when I'm charging right at my enemies. Lydia gave a bow and salute to the Miros, nodded to Landon, and retreated from the room. Chapter 11 Necessary Precautions. Lydia followed a pair of guards toward the Queen Regent's sitting room, swallowing her nervousness. She still had her comprehensive barrier spell active in case of emergencies, but she was more worried about Talion's situation than her own. He was isolated now, amongst any number of potential threats, and in spite of his obvious combat prowess, she doubted his chances against Adon and Miros together.
What is he?
Lydia pondered as she followed along familiar corridors.
And what do I need to do to protect him?
Mentioning godhood as a boon had been a gamble. She hadn't expected him to accept. Now they had placed Adon in an even more precarious position than before. He'd have to deliver his promise to Talion or find a way to remove the swordsman from the equation quickly and quietly, like right now, for instance. The sorceress shook her head, dismissing those foreboding thoughts as she arrived at the door to the Queen Regent's room. Tylan would have her own agenda, and Lydia didn't have time to worry on Talion's behalf at the moment. The guards abandoned her at the door, presumably having only been ordered to escort her that far. Lydia knocked politely. It was hardly her first time visiting the Queen Regent, but she hadn't been back to the High Palace in several months.
Come in, dear,
came Tylan's voice from inside. Lydia twisted the door handle and stepped in, sweeping her sword out of the way to prevent it from knocking against the wood. The Queen Regent was sitting in a large chair behind her work desk, inspecting the top of one of the piles of papers on her desk. Her garb was simple gray and white, her face marred by many years of worry lines. If Lydia didn't know the woman, she might have assumed her to be a secretary rather than the current ruler of the kingdom. The chamber was simple enough, with broad curtains blocking out the light from the single window and a lit fireplace in the corner providing the only major source of illumination. Three other chairs sat opposite the Queen Regent, but none of them were currently occupied. A quick glance from side to side told Lydia that there was no one else in the room, at least no one else that was visible. Her instincts told her to check for hidden attackers, but tact overruled her uneasiness. Casting a spell immediately on entering would probably come across as both rude and paranoid.
"Queen Regent," Lydia said politely.